The Extra Pack of Peanuts Travel Podcast, Episode 35. While Singapore has just been named the most expensive city to live in 2014, Paris remains the most expensive city in the world for tourists. Hey everyone, and welcome back to another edition of the Extra Pack of Peanuts Travel Podcast. And today I've got a special treat for you. A month ago, I recorded a live seminar for the good people over at Entheos, which is a massive online academy that focuses on helping people learn how to optimize all facets of their life. Or as they so eloquently put it, it's like Netflix for optimal living. They asked me to come on and speak about what I know best, travel. And so I recorded a 45-minute session about the top 10 ways to save money while traveling. And whittling it down to 10 things wasn't easy, but I picked the best 10. And they run the gamut from flying to accommodations to eating and everything in between. And today, you'll be able to listen to the whole presentation, and I know you're going to love it. Also, if you're interested in learning more about Entheos, you can head over to extrapackofpeanuts.com/Entheos. That's E-N-T-H-E-O-S. Before we begin, if you haven't already, make sure to sign up for our email newsletter. You can do that from the computer. You can also do it from your smartphone. And that's going to be the best way for you to stay in the loop and know when new podcasts are released and also when new posts are put up on the blog. You can get that by going to extrapackofpeanuts.com/free. And you'll also receive our gift to you, the completely free Become a Frequent Flyer Millionaire series. I look forward to having you join the community and the email list. And now let's jump into this great interview.
Hello, everyone, and thank you for joining us today at the Entheos Academy for Optimal Living. My name is Matt Cook, and today we'll be joined by Travis Sherry for a great class on how to tap into the power of travel. So Travis Sherry is an author and traveler obsessed with collecting frequent flyer miles to travel for free. He teaches others the ins and outs of living your traveling dreams on a budget. So why I'm excited about this class, I absolutely love Travis's energy and enthusiasm behind what he talks about, and this is his first class on the Academy, so we are so excited to have him. So thank you so much for joining us, Travis, and let's jump right in, man.
Yeah, thanks. It's my pleasure. And so, Matt, I'm going to be teaching the top 10 ways that I know to save money when traveling today, and everyone wants to travel more, or at least I'm assuming most people who are on this conference want to travel more. Matt, I'm assuming you want to travel more. But the issue holding everyone back is money. And that's what I always hear. Money, money, money. Travel is expensive. You know, we're talking hundreds to thousands of dollars for plane tickets, especially if you're going international. Hundreds of dollars for hotel rooms each night. If you get a rental car, tack that on. You know, and that's before you've actually even experienced anything in the country. And so everyone says travel's expensive, and that's what they think. But I'm going to let people in on a little secret today, and that's that travel doesn't have to be expensive. And in fact, it can actually be cheaper than staying at home. And I know that sounds insane, but I'm living proof of this. I've been able to travel to over 20 countries, and in almost all cases, I spend less money when I'm actually traveling and when I'm abroad than I actually do at home. And a lot of it is with these 10 tips that I'm going to give, and there's certainly more than 10 tips, but these are kind of what I consider the pared down version of the best things you can do to save money when you're traveling. And it can literally save you thousands of dollars when you travel. And to me, what I teach is I want people to save money when they're traveling, because the more they save, then the more they can spend later on another trip. So it breeds travel. Saving money with travel breeds more travel. And that's what we're all about. So we're going to start with airfare, and that's traditionally the most expensive part of any travel. And the first thing that I want to tell people is to utilize frequent flyer miles for almost free plane tickets. And, you know, there's a lot of stuff on the internet now. When I first started doing it, I'll give you a little background on me. 3 years ago, I had zero frequent flyer miles. I had traveled, I had flown, I didn't get frequent flyer miles because to me, they were this hard to use thing. They didn't make sense. And I also thought, well, I'm never going to be able to get enough anyway. Like, I just fly a couple times a year. That was before I do as much traveling as I do now. And I thought, it's not worth it, right? Like, my uncle had frequent flyer miles, but he traveled all the time. So I thought it was something that other people could do. And that's all I knew about it. And so I had zero. And fast forward 3 years, I'm sitting here, and this isn't to brag in any way, but a lot of people can do this. I have 3 million frequent flyer miles. I could literally get on a plane tomorrow, if there's availability, and fly anywhere in the world for under $100. And it's changed my life, and I think it can change a lot of people's life. And like I said, the hang up that most people have with frequent flyer miles is that they believe that they can only earn them through flying. But in fact, that's just one of many ways to earn frequent flyer miles. And for me, I told you, I have 2 million frequent flyer miles, and 0.4% of those have been from flying. So we're talking 99.6% are other than flying, right? The most common way you can earn frequent flyer miles is through credit card signups and using your credit card to spend money. And a lot of you have probably seen on TV those commercials that say, you know, earn 50,000 Delta miles or 40,000 Chase points for signing up for the Chase Sapphire Preferred. And that is, to put it in perspective, a round trip ticket to Europe is about 60,000 frequent flyer miles. So when you hear these deals, think in your head, all right, I'm almost to a free ticket to Europe already. If you're thinking of going domestic in the US, we're talking 25,000 round trip. So then, you know, you've got a trip or two under your belt from one credit card sign up. So that's something to be considering when you're looking at it. Credit card signups are the quickest way to earn large chunks of money. You can also shop online. So if you route through a shopping portal to buy, let's say you want to buy a $1,000 computer, and you could go to the Mac store and you could buy it, or you could route on through a shopping portal online. Maybe they give you 5 miles for every dollar you spend. All of a sudden, you're looking at 5,000 miles for a $1,000 computer. So whenever I have a big purchase, I usually look online, and there's a really cool website. We can link it up, I'm sure. It's called everyreward.com. And that will, it's EVREWARD.com. That will show you, you type in a store and it'll show you, hey, if you go through the Chase shopping portal, you get X amount of points. So you get all these bonus points for that. There's also promotions that happen all the time. Hey, fill out this survey, 1,000 frequent flyer miles, 500 frequent flyer miles. Not as lucrative as the big things we're talking about, but all in all, it adds up. And like I said, through these methods, and there's a lot more that goes into it, but through these methods, you could, in less than 3 months, realistically earn a free plane ticket anywhere in the world. So that is the number one kind of way that I save money on airfare. So 90% of my travel is done with frequent flyer miles. I don't pay for the ticket. I only pay the taxes and fees. And that usually comes out to under $100 for a plane ticket, whether that's to Australia, you know, Istanbul, whatever. You're paying under $100 on average for a plane ticket. So frequent flyer miles, the number one thing you can do to really kind of get a hold of this and really start traveling for free. Now, the second thing you can do, and this doesn't have anything to do with frequent flyer miles, so we're past that, but there's a lot of ways, even if you're paying for tickets, that you can find cheaper tickets. And the second thing you want to do is make budget airlines your friend. And in the United States, budget airlines, not as common as in Europe or as in Asia. So for example, Europeans, you talk to any European who travels, they know Ryanair, they know EasyJet. You know, even a lot of Americans who have traveled through Europe know those two things. And in Asia, the big one is AirAsia. And you can usually get tickets on these budget airlines, you know, depending where you're going, for $100, $150. A quick example, I was living in Japan. I was able to fly from Osaka, Japan to Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia, which is a 7-hour international flight. So it's not just within countries, although it can be. We're going international here, and it was less than $150 round trip on AirAsia. And that has nothing to do with frequent flyer miles. That's just me paying out of pocket. So budget airlines are a really, really cool way that you can travel for very cheap. And again, Europe, Asia are the main places you're going to take advantage of that. In the U.S., we have JetBlue, we have Spirit Airlines, we have Frontier Airlines that you should look at, but those are the two main places. And again, There are a lot of complaints about budget airlines, people saying, oh, I have to pay money to check my bag or something like that. That's all stuff, you know, you should know ahead of time, but the actual ticket can be super, super cheap. So that's the second thing you want to do, is make sure you're looking at budget airlines, especially if you're in Asia, AirAsia, and especially if you're in Europe, Ryanair and EasyJet are two great budget airlines. Now, the other question I get asked a lot by people buying plane tickets is, when is the right time to buy plane tickets? Like, is there a time when plane tickets are cheaper? And most people know it fluctuates rapidly and wildly with plane tickets. And so the answer is yes, there is a time when it is cheaper. So the third tip we're going to give you here is booking tickets when the time is right. And that's the key to knowing how to get cheap airfare. So there's three main rules you want to follow with booking tickets when the time is right. The first is that airline tickets, they're going to go on sale 330 days before your travel date. So you're looking at almost a year ahead of time you can start booking tickets. So if you get in right away, you're going to be able to snag some of those first tickets, and that's usually going to be cheaper than tickets down the road because they're opening it up, it starts low, and then it goes up, you know, as the supply decreases and the demand increases, because most people don't book a year out, you know, the price naturally goes up. Now, a lot of people think that the price then just continues to go up, up, and up. But actually, the second main rule to follow is that if you can't book early and you can afford to hold off and you know, you're a little flexible with your dates and stuff like that, you can book tickets 6 weeks before traveling. And that's kind of when the tickets hit their peak. And they start saying, okay, well, now our flight's not full, we're going to start discounting tickets again. So about 6 weeks out, 6-7 weeks out, they start dropping, you know, even more. And if you can wait up until the end, sometimes you can score really sweet deals. Now, a lot of people can't afford to say, I'm going to wait the day before. And sometimes it might not even be cheaper then. But there are times, if it is a spur of the moment or you don't care if you're going, you can monitor them and say, hey, I'm going to take off in a day and I'm going to go to London and it's going to be super cheap. So that's the second rule, about 6 weeks in. Third rule is Tuesdays are usually the cheapest day to fly on. Makes sense, because Mondays, all the business travelers are heading out, you know, going wherever they need to go. They're coming back, you know, either Friday afternoon, Friday night, or Sunday night. Casual travelers are usually trying to leave on a Friday night and come back on a Saturday or Sunday because it fits into their schedule. So if you can book on a Tuesday, that's usually the cheapest day to fly. So you want to look into that. If you have flexibility, the ticket prices are usually the lowest. Second best day is then going to be Wednesday, which makes sense. The rest of the days are fairly the same. Fridays and Saturdays will be maybe a little more expensive. But look to fly out on Tuesdays, look to fly out on Wednesdays if you have the time to do that. So there we go, Matt. We got three rules there for airfare. All right. But then usually the second biggest price point or hardest thing to save money on, or this thing you spend the most money on, I should say, is accommodation. That's the second biggest expense for people. And in my mind, that's crazy, because everyone just thinks accommodations and they think hotels. Like, that's, you know, I'm not even going to use the word hotels, because the fact that, you know, there's so much more. So we're going to call it accommodations. So people talk about hotels and they think, I got to go, I got to stay at a Hyatt, a Hilton, a Marriott. You know, that's the names we know. We're looking at $150, $200 a night. Do not do that. I mean, I guess if you got the money and you want to do it, do it. But to me, you can really, really save a ton of money here. And so the fourth thing we're going to talk about here is house sitting. And house sitting is exactly what it sounds like. And it's becoming increasingly popular around the world. It's an amazing way to get free accommodations in some incredible properties. I mean, we're talking, you know, villas in Tuscany, in you know, rural France, like awesome places in Australia, all around the world. I have friends who stayed in a castle in Ireland. Like, house sitting, you don't know what you're going to get, right? It's just, it's everything. I mean, it's people's homes. And a lot of the people who want house sitters are fairly wealthy. They have nice properties, hence they want a house sitter to come in. Sometimes this includes pet sitting, so you take care of their pets. That's a big one. A lot of people, they're going away for 10 days. They don't want to put their pet in a kennel. They want their pet to have a normal everyday life. So they will have house sitters come in. Sometimes, though, it's not pets. It's people just want someone in their home. I've seen ones as long as like 2-year house sits or indefinite house sits where they have a house on the market. They want someone there to take care of it. And you can go in and do it. So you get free accommodations. In return for that, you're asked to possibly take care of an animal, maybe do a little gardening, maybe just stay in the house, keep it safe. And like I said, house sits can range all lengths of time, from a few days, you know, we're going away for a weekend, we want someone to come in, to like I said, indefinite house sits. And there are literally all over the world. The most popular places to house sit: Canada, Europe, Australia, America, the United States, I should say, is coming up with kind of on that. There's increasingly more house sits coming up in the United States, but you know, all over the world you can find different things. So house sitting, highly recommend it. A few websites to check out. My favorite is trustedhousesitters.com. It has the most house sits per house sitters, so you have the best ratio of getting one that you want. Really easy to use. They send out daily emails, so every day when it comes in my email, I could be as productive as can be, but I click on it and I see like 15 new places and just start dreaming of cool places to be. So house sitting, really cool way, really interesting way to save on accommodations, even if it is just for a little short term or long term. Either way, you can look into that. The fifth thing that I want to mention, this is with accommodations again, is renting an apartment. And renting an apartment, a lot of people listening to this, you might know Airbnb, because Airbnb is really making a huge dent in the market. It's the most popular, but there are a ton of other sites out there, and Airbnb is a great one, but that's the one that most people know. And I'm really excited that Airbnb is becoming so popular, because renting apartments has been something that has been able to be done for a while, but isn't really in the public consciousness. So instead of staying at a hotel, I mean, it can save you a ton of money to rent an apartment. It can also give you, and one of the things I kind of try to push people to do, is a more authentic travel experience. Because you're staying in someone's place, and same with housing, you're in a house, you know, you might be in a cool area of the city, or you might be in a rural area that you're not going to find a Hilton, a Hyatt, a Marriott, things like that. So you can have this more authentic travel experience. And it's also more enjoyable, because oftentimes you have conveniences like a kitchen, a washing machine, things that you would not get in a hotel. Usually it's going to be larger than a hotel room because you're in an apartment. I mean, not always, you know, you get tiny little apartments in Europe, but there's, you know, there's tons of options, there's tons of ranges, and it can especially be cost effective for larger groups. Let's say you have a family or two or three couples that want to travel together. Normally you're going to rent two or three hotel rooms. You know, again, we said $150-$200 a night. Look at $600. You can get an apartment for probably close to the cost of one hotel room or less. So, and then you're all under the one roof, which can be good, can be bad, I guess, depending who you're traveling with. But consider renting an apartment for sure. Airbnb is a great resource to start with. There's a few in Europe. VRBO, Vrbo, is vacation rentals by owner. They have apartments there. Another one that I highly recommend and have used myself is called Go With O. That's GOWITHOH.com. They have apartments in 17 cities across Europe. A little more of a vetting process than Airbnb. People have to keep a high enough rating, and Go With O actually goes in and takes pictures of all of them and stuff like that. So you have a little more control over the apartments. They're in 17, like I said, 17 major cities across Europe. So, all right, so now I've just got done blasting hotels, right? But it's not that I don't like hotels. The sixth thing I'm going to tell you is that if you can stay at a nice hotel, that's great. The best way to do it is for free, obviously. And I've stayed at some of the world's nicest hotels for free. I'm actually planning a stay at the Park Hyatt in Paris, which runs an absurd like $1,000 a night. It's dumb, ridiculous, but I'm able to get it for free. And this works the same way as airlines work with frequent flyer miles. Hotels give out hotel points, which then earn you free nights. So exactly like frequent flyer miles earn you free flights, hotel points earn you free hotel nights. And earning those hotels work in much the same way. You get them from actually staying at hotels, much like you get airline miles from flying. But the majority of points that you can earn, and the majority, like I said, of points that I earn, because I don't really pay to stay at hotels, is going to come through different things: credit card signups, online shopping, using your hotel credit card to make purchases, and then the promotions that we also talked about then with airline frequent flyer miles. So works the same way. It just substitute hotels for free flights, and you get the gist of it. But another really cool way to give yourself an experience that you wouldn't probably be able to experience, or if you would, you're paying out the tooth for. Like I said, you know, $1,000 hotel nights, you can get for free if you do it the right way. So there's an, you know, the hotels aren't bad. Just paying top dollar for them, I wouldn't recommend. So those are three ways you can get really cheap or really good accommodations for a lot cheaper than you probably thought. We're going to now come into the next section, which is transportation. So you have your airfare over there, your flights over there, you've got your hotels, and then we're talking about transportation in a country or within your trip. Maybe you're traveling to multiple countries. And we talked about budget airlines getting from country to country, but another great way is renting a car. And a lot of people, I mean, everyone knows about rental cars. And I thought this before a couple years ago. I thought, all right, renting a car, you know, is expensive. Why would I do it? I'm sure it's much cheaper to do all these other things than renting a car, taking a bus, taking a train, this or that. Sometimes that is the case. But what I've found out is that if you rent a car the right way, it can actually oftentimes be cheaper than some of these other methods. And just like renting an apartment can be cheaper than a hotel, renting a car can oftentimes be cheaper than the other transportation options. And they allow you to have more freedom. And that's what I like. You know, you have a car, you get out on the road, and you could stop wherever you want. You see something crazy, like a perfect example. This was in the United States, but I'm driving through Georgia and I see a sign of the world's smallest church. Now, I'm sure I wouldn't see that if I was on a train or a plane or anything like that. I don't even know where I was, to be honest. Just driving, I'm like, cool. Followed a few signs, took me, you know, all down these dirt roads. Boom, I'm standing in this church. It was like a dollhouse. But, you know, it's just there's all those type of experiences that you can get with renting a car. And the major key to renting a car is to not pay the rental insurance that they gouge you on. So typically you go to rent a car and, you know, and I thought this too when I first started renting a car. I'd rent a car and they're like, hey, you want rental insurance, right? And you think, well, of course, like I don't want to crash a car and have something happen. I have insurance back home, this and that. So you rent a car and it might be $20 a day. And then the rental insurance is $20, $30, $40 a day, more than the actual price of the rental car. Now, the key to denying the insurance isn't to just deny it and then like, hey, let's cross our fingers and wish for good luck. The key to renting a car is to make sure that you have rental car insurance through another method. And a lot of times, again, this is where credit cards can really come in handy. There's all these perks with credit cards that a lot of people don't know. And the major one is that if you have a certain credit cards, they will provide for you rental insurance as part of the package. So if you rent the car with your credit card that has this, all of a sudden you get CDW, which is, you know, getting really nerdy on you here, but collision damage waiver, which means you get in an accident, you're covered. So you have that through your card itself. So there's a bunch of different cards that offer that. The easiest way, we can mention a few here, but the easiest way is to actually just look through all that fine print when you get a credit card. You might want to do it online and then just like control F and hit rental car and, you know, find the rental car stuff instead of reading through everything. But a lot of credit cards offer that rental car insurance as one of the perks. That means you can deny the rental car insurance, which is normally as much as the actual car itself, and just get the car. I've gotten cars for as little as $10, $15 a day, and you know, they come with unlimited kilometers or miles usually. And so that's one of the ways that you can rent a car the right way. The other thing, and this is just something I've learned from experience, is make sure if you are traveling between countries that you know where the gas is more expensive. For example, we're traveling through Spain. We were going into Portugal. Neither is cheap, but Spain was like, it was something crazy, like $1.20 cheaper per gallon, or, they do liters over there, but what would have been about $1.20 per gallon cheaper, or $2 cheaper. So, you know, I fill up in Spain, all of a sudden I'm saving $30. So that's just a tiny little thing there, but denying the insurance is the big thing. Also, another trick, I'm going to talk a little bit about this a tiny bit later, but if you do end up getting a SIM card for your phone, you can use that as your GPS. So rental car companies are still stuck in like 2000 where they think GPSs are these, you know, new age inventions, and they're charging like $15 a day, something ridiculous for a GPS. You could actually buy a GPS for cheaper than, you know, renting it for 10 days. But I'll tell you how to get a GPS a little bit later as we get into number nine. So that's number seven, rental cars. Don't think they're too expensive. Look into them, and especially rent them with a card that gets you the rental insurance. Also, sometimes like AAA and stuff like that, there's other things that will give you rental car insurance. So you want to look into that, and it's not as confusing as it sounds. All right, we'll go to the eighth tip now. So you don't want to rent a car, or you're not going to rent a car or whatever. if you are going to take trains, and I highly recommend public transport as well to give yourself an authentic travel experience. It's, you know, it's sometimes part of the fun of traveling. You know, take a train in India, you're not going to look at trains the same way again, you know. So trains are another great way to get around a country or a region. And if you're planning a trip of at least a week, the eighth tip I can give here is check for weekly or monthly rail passes. And a lot of people may have heard about the Eurorail pass that's very common to travel between Europe. They have all different types of permutations of it. You know, you can get it for within one country. I think you can get it, you know, within a few regions. You can get it all over Europe, stuff like that. It can be pricey, or it can sound pricey at first. You know, you're looking at, and they also do a bunch of days, I should say. It can be 3 days, 5 days, 7 days. So they have all types of plans, just like, you know, picking out a cell phone or something like that. Find the one that best suits you. It might sound pricey at first, but you want to actually then run the numbers. A lot of times you'll find that if you are taking long train trips, like we said, in Europe, if you're going between Austria to Italy or something like that, you know, it could be fairly expensive, or Austria to Spain, even longer, something like that. You get a Eurorail pass, you can hop on those trains, you have already paid up front, and then you can get on the trains and go. So that's one thing you want to look at. Can save you tons of money. I will say, having lived in Japan, everyone knows the Eurorail pass, or a lot of people are familiar with it. Japan does a similar thing, and it's called the Japan Rail Pass, and it is awesome, because trains in Japan are just phenomenal. They have some of the best trains in the world, probably right up there with Switzerland, but they're also very expensive. So the Japan Rail Pass, I believe you can get a 7-day pass, you know, with the conversion rate being normal, for about $270 US for a 7-day pass. And then they offer, you know, 14-day passes, a month pass and all. And you have to be a tourist. You have to be there on a tourist visa. So you can't be there on a resident visa like I was, which was a bummer. I could never get it. I tried every way imaginable to, like, get one through some black market. You just can't do it. But if most people would be going as a tourist, and so when my parents and my sister and all came over, I said, get the Japan Rail Pass. So, for example, a round trip ticket on the bullet train between Tokyo and Kyoto, so the two major spots that you're probably going to see when you go to Japan, it's going to cost you about $250 round trip, which is going to be roughly the same price as a 7-day Japan Rail Pass would. So that allows you to get on basically any train in Japan, especially the bullet trains. You could ride the length of Japan in 7 days, from the very top northern island of Hokkaido all the way down to Kyushu in the south. You know, we're talking, I don't know, 24 hours of train travel or something crazy like that. And it's going to cost you the same prices as one round trip ticket between Tokyo and Kyoto. So check out rail passes. They are awesome. You know, don't do it if you're going for a day or two. Obviously run the numbers, but most of the time, if you're actually going to be traveling a decent amount, rail passes are going to save you a good amount of money. All right. So that's my little spiel then on transportation. So we've hit airfare, we've hit accommodations. I'll put it here. We've hit transportation. Now I'm just going to give you, you know, extra tips, right? These are two more extra tips. And the one I kind of briefly touched on already is to get a SIM card when using your phone abroad. So one of the worst travel faux pas people can have is just saying, I'm going to go abroad, I'm not going to look into my cell phone plan. And, you know, when I get there, you know, I'm going to be calling my girlfriend or my wife or my parents or whatever. I'm going to be texting everyone. And all of a sudden you get home and you have like some absurd thing, like a $300 bill or worse. Nowadays, with the technology we have, that should never happen to anyone. It's really an outrageous, there's outrageous charges you'll get charged if you don't think ahead. So don't do that. If you've got a smartphone, iPhone, Android, anything like that, it's super easy to use abroad and not pay huge fees. And the key is to getting a SIM, is getting a SIM card for the country you're going to be in. So before you leave the country, what you have to do is unlock your phone. It sounds hard. It used to be actually kind of hard. Now it's pretty easy. What you do to unlock your phone for most carriers, I have Sprint. I know this to be true. Verizon, AT&T, I think even T-Mobile. I should mention real quick, T-Mobile has a really cool plan too for people who travel internationally a lot, where you can actually use your phone internationally. It's like $50 a month and you get unlimited data and texting in other areas. So look that up if you do travel a lot. That's called Smart Choice by T-Mobile. I've actually just been made aware of it and may switch. But right now I have Sprint for when I'm home in the United States. To unlock your phone, you call up your carrier and you say, I want to unlock my phone. I'm traveling abroad. It should be as easy as that. They'll unlock your phone, you may have to reboot your phone. So, you know, again, you back up everything. If it's an iPhone, you know, you back everything up on iTunes, you reboot, you restore it, stuff like that. So you might have to restore your phone, but all in all, it shouldn't be a difficult process. You get your phone unlocked. Then when you arrive in the country, you just go to a phone store. I've done this now. I just did this in China, a little more difficult in China, not speaking the language, but I've done it in China. I've done it in Spain. I've done it in Portugal. I've done it in Italy. You can do it in almost every country, especially countries where most people are going to be traveling. You go into a phone store, you ask for a SIM card. And especially in Europe, this is really, really common because people are always traveling throughout countries. They're going to know what you're talking about right away. You get a SIM card and there's all types of plans. Again, most of them will run you, let's say, $10 to $15 for if you want enough data, texting, talk for about a 2-week trip, you're looking at $10 to $15. Every country varies. I would say for me, what I did just as a point of reference when I was in Spain and in Portugal, I didn't really care about talking to anyone. I wasn't going to call anyone, for example. I wanted data, and that goes back to I wanted data to use it as a GPS. I want to use my iPhone map as a GPS. So I got a plan that was like unlimited texting or a ton of texting, a lot of data, and basically no talking, and it ran me $15. I had it for 3 weeks in Spain. I didn't even come close. Well, it never shut off. So I don't know if I came close. I shouldn't say that. But it never shut off. So I had stuff left over. That's the other cool thing is it's prepay. So you're not going to get these huge charges. You're going to, you know, if your phone stops working, then you've used up what you paid for. And then you go back in and top it off. So this is especially cool to use for the GPS. Again, we're talking $10-$15. You can use your smartphone as a GPS in every country. Great if you rent a car. Even great if you're just wandering around. You know, and you want to figure out where you're walking. So that would be my recommendation. Definitely look into it. It's not hard. There's plenty of people out there. I even have posts on my site about how you can do it. So don't be that person who goes and just uses your phone abroad because you don't know any better because you're going to be wasting a lot of money. So get a SIM card, use it as your GPS. Don't rent a GPS. It's usually pretty, I haven't had any problems in any countries, not even China, which I thought would be a little more difficult. So that's that. Tip number 10, then. We're going to be talking about eating. And I know most people, you know, saving money on eating, they probably didn't think about that. Or they're going to say, you know, Travis is going to tell me to eat a bowl of ramen every night. And that's not the case at all. Food for me, when I travel, that's a big part of why I travel. I love eating new foods. I think most people will agree. They want to go. They want to eat. They want to eat well. They want to try out different foods while they're traveling. I'm the exact same way. This can be a big cost. Now, there's a lot of ways that you can save money when you're eating and that you can still have a good meal. In most cultures, lunch is going to be a big meal of the day. Even if it isn't a big meal of the day, you should make it a big meal for your day because lunch specials are commonplace, not just in the U.S., but, you know, we see them all the time here. But they're commonplace across the world. They have these lunch specials. You're going to get the same amount of food. You're going to get the same types of food. You're going to get the same quality of food. And you're going to pay about 40 to 50% less than if you go out for dinner. So, of course, if you want to go out for dinner, by all means, do it. But if you are looking to save some money, you can definitely go out for lunch, take advantage of a lunch special, have a big meal at lunch, follow that with a lighter, cheaper dinner, something like that. Another way to save money and also a big thing for a lot of people is they want to try the food. They're afraid to try the food because of the fact that, you know, they might get sick. And that is a valid concern. It's happened to me numerous times. I don't think there's any way to say with 100% certainty, I'm going to go here and not get sick. But there's ways to save money and actually try to make sure you don't get sick. And one of the ways to save money is to eat this street food. And this is going to give you an authentic taste of the culture. This is really big. Especially, I'm not talking about like going to New York City and eating like a hot dog or a pretzel, although you can do that. That's street food. But especially in Asia and other cultures like that, you know, you eat the street food and a lot of people are afraid to and, you know, because they think they're going to get sick. So that's a way you can save a lot of money because street food is going to be a lot cheaper. And actually, most of the time, it's going to be a lot more sanitary than food at a restaurant, especially in, we're talking like third world countries here, because of the fact that it's constantly being cooked. A, you're watching it being cooked. So if you see someone, you know, who doesn't look sanitary cooking your food, you know, you might want to go to the other place. But a lot of times locals eat street food for their meals. So the turnover is very quick. The food's getting cooked and it's getting eaten right away. So it's not sitting there. You're not getting germs on it, things like that. Also, if you see a place that is busy, that goes for restaurants and street food, you know, especially busy with locals, you're going to want to eat there because it's probably pretty safe to eat there because they've been eating there for, you know, probably their whole lives and haven't got sick. And it's just it's a really cool way to interact with people and to eat cheaper. So street food is one way to do it. A cool tip that I picked up from a friend of mine who wrote a book on basically how to eat cheap and safe in other countries. She said, and I never thought about this before, but she said, eat around where college students eat because, you know, all of us or most of us have been college students or we've at least been 18 to 20. We've been poor, right? So usually you're going to find cheaper places there. If you eat when they're eating, it's going to, again, be that quick turnover of food and stuff like that. So eat when college people are going to be eating. Eat around there. You're going to be able to pick up some pretty cheap meals. So, you know, you don't have to scrimp on quality or anything like that, but you can save some money when you're eating. So there you go. That's the top 10 tips for saving money when traveling. If you follow these, you'll most likely be laughing all the way to the bank about how much you used to spend and how much now you've saved. So you can travel more and continue to spend less.
Wow. Thank you so much, Travis. Very, very professionally done. I can tell that you have a podcast, which I'll want you to plug as well later. I would love to jump right into language. How does that work?
Yeah, good question. You know, there are people who speak a lot of languages. One of my friends, Benny Lewis, runs a site, fluentin3months.com. So if you are actually interested in learning a language, I highly recommend his site. He actually goes around and he learns a new language every 3 months. It sounds crazy. It probably sounds as crazy as paying $100 to fly anywhere in the world. But, you know, he's doing it. He's living proof. So he has a bunch of tricks for learning language. So if you are interested in learning a language, sure, go about that way. Now, obviously, even Benny speaking 13 languages can't speak the language of every country he goes to. What I have found for me, the best thing to do is, you know, you get a guidebook or a phrase book or anything like that before you go. Learn the very basics. If you know the very basics, like we're talking hi, you don't even need to know how are you, but like hi, excuse me, how much is this, you know, where's the bathroom, of course, stuff like that, it's really going to open up the locals for you. So a lot of times people are afraid to speak to locals because they only speak English and they're afraid the locals might not speak English, so they don't even try. And I think that's one of the worst things you can do, because you'll be surprised at how many people speak English if that is your native tongue or if you do speak English. But also, if you learn a few phrases and they see that you're trying, people who might not speak perfect English but have a rudimentary sense of it or can speak some will open up and then will try to speak to you in English because you've tried to speak to them a little bit. So, you know, the tips would be get a phrase book, learn a little bit. And again, just the basics. You could do it on the plane ride over. You could learn some things and just give it a try. You're usually going to find that people enjoy your company more. And you're also going to find that then they might speak English back to you. And the second thing is, you know, speak to them in English. You know, if that's all you can do, that's all you can do. I have found that there's never been a situation I've been in where I wasn't able to communicate with either A, someone in English, or B, get my message across. You know, we all know through hand gestures and nonverbal cues, that goes a long, long way.
Right on. Yeah. And I'd also love to hear, I think, transitioning away from that and your transition from whether it was from school. I don't know if you have had a corporate background, but how did this nomadic and vagabonding life kind of take shape for you, Travis?
Yeah, so quick background. I went to school as an education major. I taught high school social studies, loved it, but just wanted to travel more and was traveling a little bit as vacations and just always thought, man, there might be more to this. Went back, did a master's, lived in Switzerland for 4 months. That was my first taste of living somewhere different. Like, not I'm going to be here for 2 weeks, but I'm in this culture, and loved it and thought, okay, this is a different experience. This is something I want to pursue. That led me to, okay, how can I live abroad? Teaching English is a great way for people, whether you have a degree in education or not. Teaching English is a great way if this is something you want to do. You want to live abroad. You can go to a ton of countries and teach English, especially Southeast Asia. I chose Japan just because my buddy had done it. Went to Japan, lived 2 years in Japan. And that was when I started my website, because I was probably Googling, like, how can I travel for cheap? I started learning about frequent flyer miles. I thought, no way, this is not happening. People are not doing this. it was a long 4 or 5 months learning about it, because it was like codes, you know, it was like another language. And once I learned that, I said, I got to make this easier for people, hence the site. And then that has allowed me now, since the site is what I do full time, to travel. And I'm kind of nomadic. I mean, I have a home base here in Philadelphia. I have a house here that I come back to, and I try to travel as much as I can, you know, maybe a month or two in certain places, sometimes shorter, but that's kind of what led me to it. I loved it. I thought there's got to be more than just 2 weeks a year. How can I make it happen? And fortunately, and I've been able and blessed enough to be able to make it happen. So,
yeah, well, and that's a brilliant segue. So for folks that, I mean, it's incredible what you've been able to carve out for yourself as, I mean, literally your life. For folks that have those 2 weeks and they decide to spring to Europe, what are your suggestions? I mean, do we try to hit every country in Europe in 2 weeks, or do we try to stay in two countries, a country? What are your thoughts on staying somewhere for a while or springing to a bunch of different places?
Yeah, I'll tell you what I suggest, but that's not what I always do. I suggest, you know, it's great to see all these things, but I really think that if you can take it slower, that usually is going to give you these more authentic experiences. I found that travel isn't about, hey, here I am at the Eiffel Tower, although that's cool. It's like a great Facebook moment, Instagram moment. But I found that travel is really made up by the experiences you have and the people you meet. And, you know, as you're bumping around really quickly, sometimes it's harder to meet those people. So if you have 2 weeks, I would, and you know you're going to have 2 weeks in the future, and you know that you're going to make travel a priority, so that next year you're going to be able to go somewhere and somewhere and somewhere. You know, think of it like that and say, maybe I am going to go to two places or three places. Let's spend 4 or 5 days in a place. It's pretty easy to get between cities, especially like we said in Europe. You know, you could take the train. I would suggest going slower, only because I think that it's going to be give you a different experience. That being said, you know, I was just in China for 3 weeks, and we did like 6 different places, and that was slower than some of our other travel. We were in Italy for 10 days a little while back, and we did 3, almost 4 cities. So, you know, you got to do what feels right. And I think going to see all those places and doing it isn't a bad way to do it. But I think that a lot of people don't think about slow travel, and if they did, that might be a different, more unique experience.
Right. Absolutely. You're right. And it's going to apply person to person, but I really appreciate the fullness with which you answered that question. So thank you. I'd love to know also, so going to a country, I mean, rather than just, you know, just kind of walking into the country and now what do I do, which I'm sure can be a lot of fun. Is there a way that you sometimes go about researching or any resources that we could look at as far as figuring out like what the locals do and really getting a flavor for a country before we step on land there?
Yeah, for sure. I think if you are the person who has a lot of time, then landing in a country and just going for it is fine. And there's nothing wrong with that. And we're talking about the people who are like, hey, I'm going for a gap year. I'm going for 3 months. And, you know, that's fine. And I've done some of that to varying degrees of success. Sometimes it's been more stressful than it's worth. Sometimes it's been absolutely incredible because I didn't know anything beforehand. But if you are... you know, you want to plan more or you just don't have as much time, I go about it really simply. If I don't know anything about a place, I don't know anyone who knows about it, I think the coolest way is getting recommendations from people who have been there. So you might have had friends who have been there. If you're going somewhere like Italy, everyone has friends who've been to Italy or Paris or something like that. Ask them for recommendations, because one of the best parts for me is going to a place that someone has recommended to me. I just love getting recommendations, finding that place, and almost always it lives up to a recommendation or you know, to the hype. So ask your friends, ask your family, ask people you know. If you do have any other community, like for me now when I go to a place, I shoot it out on Twitter. And a lot of times I have some followers who are pretty travel hungry. Obviously they follow my blog, they like traveling, but I always get responses. But even if you are on Twitter or Facebook or something like that, you know, you put out a thing and I don't use hashtags a lot, but if you put out a hashtag of like going to #Rome recommendations, people will respond to you. Believe it or not, people, you have no idea who they are, they'll give you recommendations. That's another cool way. Outside of that, I always start or 90% of the time, start with Wiki Travel. Wiki Travel is great. It just gives you a really good overview. You know, you scroll through, you get some history, you kind of see what to do, places to eat, stuff like that. It's a really cool resource that just encompasses everything. And then a lot of times just by Googling, you'll end up as well on Lonely Planet. They have a forum called Lonely Planet Thorn Tree, which gives a lot of people might give more, that might be more recommendations that are a little more, I won't say authentic, but closer to the ground, localized recommendations from people who have really been through that region. There's moderators, they'll give advice too. So that's kind of a neat way to start. But yeah, I usually Google, it sounds crazy, but it's like top 10 things to do in Rome. Boom. You get a list of stuff, you know, and then you go from there and I love researching. So I go that way. Personally, I'm actually starting a video thing where it's going to be like top 10 things to do in whatever place I am, because I think that there are no videos out there. They're all like 10 minutes long of some guy just going on about it. It's mm-hmm. going to be under 2 minutes. It's going to be like, boom, 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 boom. See these. If you want to research more, go for it. So just give people a starting off point. So hopefully that takes off. Hopefully we get a big kind of queue of videos there for a bunch of destinations.
I'm excited about it. So I'm, I'll be waiting, Travis. just a couple really quick, questions. I'd love to hear, the Antheos community, we're so big about our fundamentals or our blissiplines, the things that really keep us centered, I suppose, you know, to use a cliche word, but the things that make us have an incredible day. And I'd love to know for you if there's a sense of being off kilter when traveling and maybe ways that you either center yourself, or is it all about like, hey, can I just step out of my comfort zone to the nth degree? You know, and just adventure. So I'd love to hear your thoughts on that.
Yeah, it's something that I think I know I have struggled with. I think anyone who travels, even just a little bit, you struggle with, because you want to do, it goes back to that. You want to do so much. You want to make the most of all the time you have. But with that, then you can stress out. We all know those people who like have every 15 minutes planned of a vacation. I would not recommend that, because it's going to stress you out more. But yeah, I think finding the balance is very hard. And for each person, it's completely different. And I still haven't always found the balance. And I think that maybe embracing that, saying like, I'm going to be going here, it's going to be different. I can have expectations, I can have plans, but I knowing ahead of time that you have to roll with the punches a little more than you will, or maybe a lot more, depending on where you're traveling. A lot more than you would in normal life is one way to really help you center. Like, say, all right, you know, I'm going to have a budget for this trip, but don't freak out about it. You know, and this is me speaking. This is like frugal Travis budget master speaking. Don't freak out about it. There's something you want to do. Go do it. Know that the experiences you're having are going to be once in a lifetime, or, you know, and just enjoy it. So for me, there have been times for sure where I've been like stressed out, freaked out when I'm traveling. And I've always then tried to take half a day, if you're there longer, it can be a day. If you're there not so long, maybe half a day, and just relax. Like, if that means you're laying in your room, reading a book and doing the same thing you would do at home and not out running around, that's fine. You know, if that means you're meditating, or if that means you're going to do yoga or whatever it is that helps center you back home, take that with you when you go travel and realize it's okay to not be go, go, go all the time. And again, it's harder to do than it is to say, but that really helps center me. And I do think embracing with that, then, like you said, kind of embracing the adventure and embracing the unknown is another part of it. You know, don't be afraid to do things you wouldn't do. I go by the mantra to do one thing every day that I'm scared of. And that's very, very easy to do when you're traveling, whether it's talking to a lady, you know, at a store that you just are like, for whatever reason, you don't know how it's going to go. Just go talk to her. It doesn't have to be a big thing like jumping out of a plane, but there's plenty of things when you travel that's going to scare you. Just do one thing. And I think once you do that, it snowballs. And again, I'm a big proponent of like, it's the people you meet and the experiences you have, not the things that you're seeing. And that really will help you out. And last point, real quick, I'm thinking real quick. I had a friend who just sent on his honeymoon to Argentina. After 3 days, he's like, man, this is weird. I really don't like this place. And he was all stressed out. And I told him, you know what? There's going to be places that you don't like. Like that happened to me. I went to Penang, Malaysia. I thought it was going to be awesome. For whatever reason, it didn't really resonate with me. So another thing to take away is like, if you're not liking as much as you thought, that's fine, because that's what makes the places that you really love exceptionally awesome, right? Because you've been in those times where it's maybe not living up to expectations. So don't get freaked out if it's not the best thing in the world, because whenever people write about travel, they tell you the good stuff. They don't tell you the bad stuff, but everyone experiences it.
Great. Yeah. And I appreciate that point. That's incredible. Well, and I think, Travis, that's a great way for us to move towards a close. So I'd love to hear any of your final thoughts, as well as ways that we can reach out, find more about your blog and what you're up to.
Yeah, for sure. Final thoughts. I just tell people there's no wrong way to travel. I've told you 10 ways to travel and save money. And, you know, that's how I like to travel. And I like it because I can travel more. But there isn't a wrong way to travel. If you say, Travis, I don't care what you say, I'm going to stay at hotels. Cool. Go out and do it. Staying at a hotel, going on a cruise, going to an all-inclusive. I've done all that. I like it. There's a time and place for it. So if that's you, that's fine. If going for 6 months off the grid with no cell phone and not telling anywhere where you're going and having no plans is you, cool, go do it. So there's no wrong way to travel. Just get out there and do it. And if you are interested in saving money, there are plenty of ways to do it. Don't think that, hey, you know, I got to go and drop thousands and thousands of dollars on a vacation. It really can be a lot cheaper than you think. And you know, hopefully these tips have helped you. But do what you want to do, because that's what you're going to get the most enjoyment out of. But if it is saving money and you're passionate about that like I am, then hopefully some of these tips have helped. As far as meeting up or connecting, extrapackofpeanuts.com is my site. Everything's linked there, but I'll just give you some of the main highlights. You know, you can find it on Facebook. You can like the page. I always post stuff when we do it there. Twitter is at Pack of Peanuts. I'm getting the hang of Twitter slowly here, Matt. Like, I'm not a, you know, I'm learning hashtags, all that stuff. My wife set up an Instagram account for me. That's been awesome. So Instagram is also Pack of Peanuts. That's cool, because then you can just look at my pictures. You don't even have to listen to me like talk or do any, or read any of my writing. I also do one thing I really, really love is I have a podcast. It's called the Extra Pack of Peanuts Travel Podcast. That is linked on my site. You can also find it on iTunes. We put out one episode every week on Mondays, and that's been an awesome way. I bring on experts to talk about their travel experiences. So it's not always, hey, here's how you're going to save the most money, or here's, you know, my site is a lot about frequent flyer miles and traveling and different ways to do it and save money. But it's all types of stuff. We touch on the stuff that you asked me about, you know, authentic travel. How do you center yourself? Benny was on. How do you learn different languages? Jody, who was the girl I mentioned, who wrote the book about eating street food, was on. So a lot of people with a lot of different expertises, but we get to the core of why do we continue to travel? And hopefully it's to inspire others to continue to travel or to travel and just tell people, this is kind of some of the ways that these people travel. Hopefully you can take some of the tips away. So the podcast is like a baby of mine. I've loved it, and it's been super fun. And I would urge anyone out there who's interested in travel, check it out. It's not because I'm a good interviewer. It's because the people I have on the show are awesome guests. So
incredible. Thank you so much, Travis. And I can absolutely feel your passion behind the podcast as well as everything else that you're doing. So thank you so much for that. And thank you to the audience as well for taking this time. And please do make sure to check out his podcast as well as Travis's website, extrapackofpeanuts.com. And we encourage you right now to take a moment, in fact, and think about your number one favorite big idea from today's class, and most importantly, how you can apply it to your life starting today, so when you're planning that next trip. So thank you so much, Travis, for sharing your wisdom.
Awesome. And I always tell people, Matt, think of your dream destination, come up with it, and that makes the whole process more real of actually planning and saving money, because then you're saying, I'm going to Italy, not I'm earning 50,000 frequent flyer miles. So yeah, think of the best big idea and really think of where you want to go, because you're going to be able to do that and you're going to do it a lot cheaper. And that's the goal of this whole thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Have a great day, everyone. Thank you so much.
Hey guys, I hope you picked up some new tips and tricks from this podcast on how to save money when traveling. And if you've got some tips as well that you use, we'd love to hear from you. Chime in and go to extrapackofpeanuts.com/podcast. Find the show notes for this podcast and leave a comment on how you save money when traveling so we can all learn from you. If you're also interested in Entheos, make sure to head over to extrapackofpeanuts.com/Entheos right now. They're offering a free 10-day trial for all the videos in their entire academy. If you sign up now, you can get a free 10-day trial to that. You can get that extrapackofpeanuts.com/Entheos. That's E-N-T-H-E-O-S. Lastly, if you're listening to a travel podcast, that probably means that you want to travel more, and I want to help you do that. And the easiest way for me to help you travel more while spending less is for you to go over and sign up for the Extra Pack of Peanuts email newsletter. And you can do that by going to extrapackofpeanuts.com/free. By signing up for the newsletter, you'll be getting email updates anytime we put up a new podcast, as well as anytime we put up a new post to the site. You're also going to get our free copy of Become a Frequent Flyer Millionaire, which is going to set you on the path of how to start acquiring frequent flyer miles and really start traveling around the world for next to nothing. So extrapackofpeanuts.com/free. You can sign up for our email newsletter. You can stay abreast of everything that's happening on Extra Pack of Peanuts, and I can help you start to travel more while spending less. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in once again to another edition of the Extra Pack of Peanuts podcast. I'll see you next week. And until then, happy free travels.